He turns back for the gun. That is the last decision Dennis Copperbarth ever makes. Not a retreat, not a surrender, not a final calculation about survival odds or exit routes or whether the policeman behind him has already drawn. He drops his submachine gun in the chaos of the Caymanas Park robbery, and he turns back to pick it up, and in that single backward step, the bullet finds him, enters his chest, stops his heart. April 30th, 1978, 27 years old, Jamaica's most wanted, dead on a racetrack in St. Catherine, with the day's receipt still in the cashier's drawer. The officer who fired the killing shot, Keith Moss, dies in the same exchange. Nobody collects the $5,000 bounty. Nobody gave Copper up. That detail, the uncollected reward, is worth holding on to, because it tells you something about this story that the official record never fully explains. Dennis Barth was born in 1951 in the Bond Street area of Western Kingston, but it is East Kingston, specifically the tight zinc-roofed corridors of Rennoc Lodge, where he becomes Copper. He drops out of Rennoc Lodge Elementary School at 12 years old. What fills the years immediately after is not cleanly documented, but by the time he is 18, he has already been convicted of murder and sentenced to what would become the first installment of a criminal record, totaling 12 offenses and approximately 40 years in accumulated sentences, almost none of which he serves consecutively, because the walls keep failing to hold him. He escapes Tower Street Adult Correctional Center. He is recaptured. He escapes again. In March 1977, he breaks out of the St. Catherine District Prison, along with five other inmates. Some accounts suggest the opportunity presents itself during a football game in the yard. However it happened, by spring 1977, Dennis Barth is free. His face is going up on wanted posters across the island, and the Jamaica Constabulary Force is beginning to understand that this particular man is a different category of problem entirely. The National Intelligence Bureau will later name him Jamaica's first true most wanted, not merely a dangerous criminal, but a new definition, the opening entry in a terrible taxonomy, and somewhere in the bank robbery proceeds that fund the Hot Steppers' operations, there is money flowing into East Kingston's communities that nobody in authority can fully trace. Not yet. Keith Trinity Gardner, who will spend 40 years as one of Jamaica's most decorated police officers, says years later that it took years to break up the network Copper built. Years after the man himself was already dead. That network, who it reached, which doors it opened, which names it protected, never becomes fully public record. Remember that. Kingston, in the 1970s, is a city at war with itself. The garrison system, communities locked into political allegiance through a combination of patronage, street muscle, and manufactured dependency, has been decades in the building. And by the mid-1970s, it is running at full, catastrophic pressure. JLP community against PNP community. Shower posse against Spanglers. West Kingston against East Kingston, against the state, against everyone. The politicians who designed the garrison infrastructure to deliver votes are now watching it deliver bodies. And the bodies are arriving faster than any political calculation anticipated. Into this city, Copper builds the Hot Steppers posse out of Rennoc Lodge, politically aligned with the Workers' Party of Jamaica, operationally specialized in bank robbery, and led by a man whose criminal reputation rests on a quality that sets him completely apart from the ordinary garrison enforcer. He is precise. He is cool. He does not perform danger the way Kingston's rude boys perform it. No swagger, no public threat-making. No identity built on visible menace. He never assumed the rude boy persona, one contemporary observer recalls. He is well-shaved, well-dressed, composed. He looks like a man with somewhere to be. He just happens to be capable of firing a submachine gun with an accuracy that makes police officers consider their mortality in new ways. He has already killed two policemen by the time the wanted posters go up. He has already been wounded in a confrontation in Tivoli Gardens, disarmed by police, and escaped anyway, shot and in custody, and still free by the end of it. The exact sequence of every shootout he engages in across the late 1970s is not completely archived, but the pattern is documented and consistent. Copper fights the police directly, survives engagements that should end him, and walks. This is not luck compounding itself into legend. This is a man who understands firearms, angles, timing, and the specific geometry of staying alive in a gunfight. Assistant Commissioner Keith Trinity Gardner, 40 years in the constabulary, the man who eventually helps dismantle what Copper built, is asked late in his career to name the most dangerous criminal he ever encountered. He does not pause. When you talk about bad man, to me it is Dennis Barth, alias Copper, because he was more meticulous than the others. He was a very intelligent, cool, calculated guy. The wannabe Abias Fine guide Copper would denafoim intelligent Farik Storn Palsem and say dem fine intelligent Furing Goy Gekalfer. Frank Owen, who covers Jamaica's garrison world more deeply than almost any outside journalist, calls him a cross between John Dillinger and Robin Hood. The Hot Steppers bank robbery proceeds flow back into the communities of East Kingston. This is not mythology. It is part of how Copper maintains a protection network so deep that a $5,000 bounty placed on his head produces not a single informant. The community does not give him up because the community is being fed by what he takes from Kingston's financial institutions. That is a transaction. That is a system. And systems, as Gardner already knows but cannot yet prove, do not end when one man dies. Now close your eyes for a second. If you grew up hearing his name passed down at a kitchen table in Kingston, in a yard in Spanish Town, in a living room in the Bronx or Brixton or Scarborough, you already know what this city was carrying. You know what it meant to live somewhere that the state had abandoned so completely that a bank robber became the most reliable source of community provision. You know what it felt like when the men who protected your block were the same men the police were hunting. You don't need this explained. You lived inside the explanation. And here is what those communities also knew, in the way that people know things that are never written down. The money did not only go to the poor. Some of it went somewhere else. Some of it moved through channels that Gardner spent years trying to map and never fully could. The network extended further than Rennoc Lodge. The protection came from somewhere with more power than a garrison don could generate alone. That question, still open, still cold, is the part of Copper's story that the official record closes without answering. By late 1977, something shifts. The violence that has been consuming Kingston's communities for a decade has begun eating its own architects, and even the men at the center of it are exhausted. Claude Massope, Don of Tivoli Gardens, commander of the JLP's shower posse, the most feared enforcer in West Kingston, is having quiet conversations with people on the other side of the political divide. His words are passed down and quoted for decades. "Everybody I grew up with is dead." Massope finds Copper. Two men from opposite sides of Kingston's deepest fault line. JLP's fortress in Tivoli. PNP's marksman in Rennoc Lodge. They arrange a peace, practical, unsentimental, built not on ideology, but on the arithmetic of survival. And that peace becomes the foundation on which the most famous concert in Jamaican history is constructed. April 22, 1978, 8 days before Copper dies at Caymanas Park, the One Love Peace Concert, National Stadium, 30,000 people. Bob Marley on stage, reaching out in the dark to join the hands of Prime Minister Michael Marley and opposition leader Edward Saga, two politicians who have spent years arming the garrisons, now being photographed making peace inside one. The image goes around the world. It becomes the symbol of reconciliation, of reggae's redemptive power, of Jamaica choosing love over gunfire. What the image does not show is who made it possible at ground level, the dons who put down enough of their war to allow 30,000 people to stand in a stadium together without dying, men like Massope, men like Copper. The peace was built from the bottom up, by people with blood on their hands who decided, briefly, that enough blood had been spilled. 8 days later, Copper is dead. Massop follows him in January 1979. More than 40 bullets fired into his car on Washington Boulevard. Both architects of the truce, both gone within a year of the concert. The peace dissolves almost immediately, and Kingston goes back to war as though the National Stadium moment was a dream. The city had briefly and then forgot. Supercat's ghetto red hot preserves them in a single breath. Kingston we D when Massop gets shot, / we D when Copper gets shot, placing them side by side in the city's memory, two men whose violence and whose peace are permanently inseparable. Now, Caymanas Park, April 30th, 1978. The crowd is thinning. Race day is ending. Copper moves through what remains of the afternoon audience, toward the cashiers, composed, clean, unbothered, wearing the disguise he has worn 100 times before. The disguise of a man who looks like nobody. A policeman on duty spots him approaching, sees something in the geometry of the movement, understands what is happening before it happens. He fires. The bullet hits Copper. The guns come out. The crowd scatters. Copper's submachine gun hits the ground. And here is the moment, this specific, irreversible moment, where the legend and the man separate from each other permanently. He turns back for the gun. The policeman fires again. The bullet enters Dennis Barth's chest and finds his heart. His associate, Dennis Shaba Adair, dies in the same exchange. A third crew member, Hammond Berger, is wounded and dies in hospital. Keith Moss, the officer whose aim ends Copper's life, is himself mortally wounded and does not survive. 4 people dead at a racetrack. And the $5,000 bounty on Jamaica's most wanted, never collected, because nobody told that uncollected reward is the last word on everything Gardner spent years trying to understand. It tells you that the network was not just operational, it was loyal. It tells you that what Copper built in East Kingston was not merely criminal infrastructure. It was a form of belonging, a contract, and contracts written in community provision and redistributed bank robbery proceeds are not dissolved by a single bullet, no matter how precise the shot. Gardner dismantles the network over years. He never says publicly how far up it went. The question that remains, and it will remain, because the record closes without answering it, is not whether Dennis Barth was dangerous. He was. 2 dead policemen, 12 convictions, 2 prison escapes, a decade of open warfare with the Jamaican state. The question the comments section of history has never fully settled is simpler and harder than that. Was Copper a criminal who happened to feed his community, or was he a community provider who happened to rob banks? Kingston knew the answer. It just never gave him up.